Chapter 9 Part 1 Nash and I went up to our house together so that he could speak to Partridge. Afterwards, he joined Joanna and me.
She wasn't much help. She just said that the girl was worried about something and that she wanted Partridge's advice.
There's something I want to ask, I said. Why were my sister and I sent anonymous letters when we had only just arrived here?
The superintendent said, I don't know if either of you looked closely at the envelope of the letter Miss Burton got. If so, you may have noticed that it was actually addressed to Miss Barton, and the A altered to a U afterwards.
That remark ought to have given us a new idea about the whole business. But none of us noticed it then. When Nash had gone, Joanna said,
You don't think that letter was really meant for Miss Emily, do you?
No, because it would not have begun, You are an evil painted woman, I replied. Then Joanna suggested that I should go down to the town.
You ought to hear what everyone is saying this morning.
Part 2 Joanna was quite right. The high street was full of people talking. I met Griffith first.
You've no idea who committed this murder, I asked.
No, I wish I knew.
He asked how Joanna was, and said that he had some photographs she wanted to see. I offered to take them to her.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I shall be passing that way later in the morning.
I let him go as I saw his sister coming, and this time I wanted to talk to her.
Absolutely awful, Amy Griffith called. It's the first murder we've ever had in Limstock. I hear Megan found the body. It must have given her a bit of a shock.
It did, I said shortly. Then I made a sudden decision.
Tell me, Miss Griffith, was it you who persuaded her to return home yesterday?
Well, I wouldn't say persuaded.
But you did say something to her.
Amy Griffith looked straight into my eyes.
That young woman doesn't know how people talk.
Talk? What talk? Amy Griffith continued,
Oh, I don't think any of it's true, but it's rather hard on the girl when she's got to earn a living.
Has she got to earn a living? I asked, confused.
It's a difficult position for her. I mean, she can't go immediately and leave the boys with no one to look after them. But, of course, people will gossip.
Who are you talking about? I asked.
Elsie Holland, of course.
And what are people saying? Amy Griffith laughed. It was, I thought, rather an unpleasant laugh.
That she is planning to become Mrs. Symington number 2. Of course it's mad. And poor Dick Symington hasn't any idea of all this. But if the girl is always there, making him comfortable and looking after the boys, well, he will begin to depend on her. And that's why I told Megan that she ought to go home. It looks better than having Dick Symington and Miss Holland alone in the house, don't you agree? She said, and walked away.
Part 3 I met Mr. Pye by the church. He was talking to Emily Barton and turned to me with obvious pleasure.
So, a real Sunday newspaper murder here in Limstock. Only a little servant, but still it is news.
Miss Barton said,
It is shocking. She was such a nice girl.
She came to me from the children's home where she had lived for most of her life, and Partridge was very pleased with her. Then she went to work for the Symingtons.
Of course, said Mr. Pye. But Limstock, I am afraid, is not what it was. Anonymous letters, murders. What next?
Emily Barton said, They don't think that the two are connected, I hope.
An interesting idea, said Mr. Pye. The girl knew something, therefore she was murdered. Yes, yes, of course. How clever of you to think of it.
I can't bear to think of it.
And Emily Barton turned away, walking very fast.
What do you really think about all this business? I asked Mr. Pye.
Such unlikely people can surprise you by doing such strange things, he replied. So I would advise the police to forget fingerprints and handwriting and to study character. Notice instead what people do with their hands and the way they eat their food, and if they laugh sometimes for no obvious reason.
Mad, I said.
Completely mad, said Mr. Pye. But you'd never know it.
And he walked happily off down the street.
Part 4. I arrived back at Little Furze just a few minutes before lunchtime, and I went out to join Joanna on the veranda. There were two chairs by the iron table and two empty glasses on it. On another chair was a strange object.
What on earth is this? I asked.
Oh, it's a photograph of a diseased lung, which Dr. Griffith thought I'd be interested in.
I looked at the photograph. Every man has his own ways of connecting with women, but I would not, myself, choose to do it with photographs of lungs, diseased or otherwise.
It looks most unpleasant, I said.
How was Griffith?
He looked tired and very unhappy. I think he's got something on his mind.
I should say he's got you on his mind.
I wish you'd leave the man alone, Joanna.
Oh, do be quiet. I haven't done anything.
She turned and walked away across the lawn. The diseased lung was beginning to curl up in the sun. I picked it up by one corner and took it into the sitting room. Then I pulled out a heavy book from the bookcase in order to press the photograph flat again between its pages. It was a book of somebody's sermons, and it came open in my hand in a surprising way. In a moment, I saw why. From the middle of it, a number of pages had been neatly cut out. I was looking at the book which Poison Pen must have used to cut out words to use in the anonymous letters. But who had cut the pages out? Well, it could have been anyone who had been alone in this room. Any visitor who had sat here waiting for Emily Barton. So, almost anyone in Limstock.
Part 5. After lunch, I took the book down to the police station. They were excited. They tested it for fingerprints, but they didn't find any of interest. There were mine and Partridge's, because she cleaned very carefully, but nobody else's. I asked Nash how he was getting on.
We're narrowing it down. We know the people it couldn't be.
Ah, I said. And who remains?
Miss Ginch. She had arranged to meet someone yesterday afternoon at a house they were selling not far along the road from the Symingtons. And the day of Mrs. Symington's suicide, which was Miss Ginch's last day at Symington's office, she could also have walked past the house when she went out to get some stamps.
Who else remains as a suspect?
Nash looked very straight ahead of him. You'll understand that we can't decide to leave out anybody.
No, I said. I see that.
He said, Miss Griffith went to Brenton for a meeting of the Red Cross yesterday. She arrived rather late.
You don't think...
No, but I don't know. Miss Griffith seems a very healthy-minded woman, but...
What about last week? Could she have put the letter in the letterbox?
It's possible. She was shopping in the town that afternoon. The same is true of Miss Emily Barton. She was out shopping yesterday afternoon, and she went to see some friends on the road past the Symington's house the week before.
I shook my head. I remembered Miss Emily coming in yesterday, so bright and happy and excited. Yes, excited. Surely not because...
And there's Mr. Pye, Nash said. A strange character. Not, I think, a very nice character. And he says he was alone in his garden on both occasions.
So you're not only suspecting women?
I don't think a man wrote the letters, but we've got to include everybody. Because this is a murder case. You're all right, he smiled. And so is your sister. And Mr. Symington didn't leave his office. And Dr. Griffith was visiting patients.
I said, so your suspects are down to those four. Miss Ginch, Mr. Pye, Miss Griffith, and Miss Barton.
Oh, no, no. We've got a couple more, as well as the vicar's wife.
You've thought of her?
We've thought of everybody. And Mrs. Dane Calthrop could have done it. She was in the woods bird-watching yesterday afternoon, and the birds can't speak for her.
He turned sharply as Owen Griffith came into the police station.
Hello, Nash. I heard you wanted to speak to me.
Nash said,
Mrs. Symington was taking some pills that you gave her. Would too many of those have killed her?
Not unless she'd taken about 25 of them. Anyway, there's no doubt about the cause of death. It was cyanide.
Oh, I know that. I only thought that when committing suicide, you'd prefer to take a lot of pills that would make you go to sleep, rather than to take cyanide.
Oh, right. But cyanide is almost certain to kill you. With the pills, it might have been possible to save her if she was found quickly.
I see. Thank you, Dr. Griffith.
Griffith left, and I walked slowly up the hill to Little Furze. Joanna was out, and there was a note written on the telephone pad. If Dr. Griffith rings up, I can't go on Tuesday, but could manage Wednesday or Thursday. I went into the sitting room, sat down, and tried to think the whole thing over. Owen's arrival had interrupted my conversation with the superintendent, who had just mentioned two other people as being possible suspects. I wondered who they were. Partridge, perhaps? After all, the book with the pages cut out had been found in this house. But who was the other? Somebody that I didn't know. I closed my eyes and considered four people in turn. Gentle little Emily Barton? What points were there actually against her? Controlled from early childhood. Her dislike of discussing anything not very nice. Was that actually a sign of an inner interest in such things? Amy Griffith? Surely nobody could control her. Cheerful and successful. Yet there was something... Ah, yes. Owen Griffith saying, We had some anonymous letters sent to people in the north of England when I was working there. Had that been Amy Griffith? No, because they'd found the writer of those. Griffith had said it was a schoolgirl. But why did I suddenly feel so cold and upset? Perhaps it was Amy Griffith, not the schoolgirl. And Amy had started her tricks again. And that was why Owen Griffith was looking so unhappy. He suspected his sister. Mr. Pye, not a very nice little man. I could imagine him arranging the whole business, laughing. Then that message on the telephone pad in the hall. Why did I keep thinking of it? Griffith and Joanna. He was falling in love with her. No, that wasn't why the message worried me. It was something else. My thoughts were going round and round, and I kept repeating to myself, "No smoke without fire. No smoke without fire." That's it. It all fits together. Then I was suddenly in the church, and Elsie Holland was getting married to Dr. Griffith, and the Reverend Dane Calthrop was reading the service in Latin. And in the middle of it, Mrs. Dane Calthrop jumped up and cried, "It's got to be stopped!" Then I woke up, and I was in the sitting room of Little Furs, and Mrs. Dane Calthrop had just come through the French windows and was standing in front of me saying, "It has got to be stopped, I tell you." I jumped up. "Sorry, what did you say?" Mrs. Dane Calthrop banged a small table with her hand. "It's got to be stopped. These letters. Murder. We can't go on having poor children like Agnes Waddle killed." "You're quite right," I said. "But what do you suggest we do?" "I said this wasn't an evil place. I was wrong. It is." "Yes, but what are you going to do?" "I'm going to call in an expert, someone who knows all about evil." Before I could say anything, Mrs. Dane Calthrop went out into the garden again.